Noirvember. Where art thou, Noirvember? Art thou near, or art thou far? Where are thar, Noirvember? Music.
Welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
You hear that? I'm opening up a delicious Peps because we're going to get into some shit.
And Erica.
I hope you have enough Pepsi for everyone, Mark, because supplies are low here on the island. You need to ration that Pepsi.
Well, if it wasn't for your friends who decided to shoot all the Pepsis.
They would. Those friends would shoot all the Pepsis. And welcome to the return of a long-lost themed month, Noirvember 2, where we discuss all the noir movies released by New World Pictures. Yeah. Thank you, New World Pictures Podcast Cafe members. Yeah, get excited. And we're going to talk about a movie that really puts the question mark in noir. With 1976's Foxtrot.
They thought they discovered paradise. A hole in time. An island of peace. And mystery.
This island is my only hope. If I stay there, I'd die.
I had to get you. I had to stop wanting you. Wanting you.
Without rules. Without reason. Every barrier, every taboo can be broken and lost forever.
Have you known many men?
Only one at a time.
Until there is nothing left. To break.
Looks like we'll be staying here for the rest of our lives.
Now, Liviu, we are where we wanted to be. Alone on an island.
Four lives caught in a game of passion. Where desire is hunger, and pleasure the only reward for staying alive.
If you go near her, I'll kill you.
You'll kill us. You do understand.
I'm not a murderer, Joe.
No, not when it doesn't suit you.
That's right.
Well, if you don't care who mounts your wife.
Peter O'Toole, Charlotte Rampling, and Max von Sydow. Roger Corman presents The Far Side of Paradise.
That's right. 1976's Foxtrot, a.k.a. The Other Side of Paradise, a.k.a. The Far Side of Paradise, brought to you by Brandy. Everything tastes better with Brandy, whether it's a fresh crab dinner, a cigar, or a jar of Frank Cooper's original Oxford marmalade. Brandy even makes your company better, whether it's your lover that may or may not like you, your paid staff members, or even those friends that stay in your house a little too long and destroy your idyllic island paradise. And the immortal words of Count Liviu,
good brandy can dispel anything.
That's his legacy, man.
You did it, Liviu!
You did it, buddy. This movie is directed by Arturo Ripstein. He was a Mexican director who was a protege of Luis Buñuel, and he had directed a few features in his native Mexico, including 1974's The Holy Office, which was nominated for the Palme d'Or at Cannes. Before he did this movie, which is his first English language feature, and he told his rep told the LA Times in February 1976, he said, quote, he was concerned that it not be distributed by a major studio, fearing it might just be thrown out to the public without the proper exposure. That's after Roger Corman had picked it up, and I'm not sure he was too happy with that either.
Not a major studio. I mean, he got what he wanted.
He did not want it to be distributed by a major studio, so he got Roger Corman instead. And we'll get to those results. We'll see. I will say this just as a tease, but let's just say Arturo Ripstein never directs another English language movie ever again. This stars Peter O'Toole, who had just finished another movie in Mexico. It was a reverse Robinson Crusoe story called Man Friday. He described his reasons for appearing in Foxtrot in July 1975. He said, one of the reasons I'm doing the film is I adore Mexico. I was really impressed by the technicians there.
Okay.
Now, if you were wondering, was he impressed by the technicians or the tequila? Well, that's the thing. He actually was, let me go back. I have another quote from him, too. O'Toole then said this. He said, it's really been a set of bizarre coincidences. For instance, it was the cameraman on Man Friday who brought us the script. However, the English version, without my knowledge, was written by one of my closest friends, Henry Craig. So Ripstein and another writer write the film initially, and I guess it's translated, and then his friend writes the script for everybody. Now, if you wondered if it was just these bizarre circumstances of his good friend writing the script and him going back to Mexico to enjoy the great technicians, or maybe the tequila, the thing is that O'Toole was off the sauce for the shoot. According to Marilyn Beck, in June of 1975, it says that he had been on the no sauce regime since undergoing abdominal surgery shortly before Foxtrot filming began. So he was not drinking through this movie, or at least probably through big chunks of it.
Or just not as much as normal.
Yeah, right. Just enough to null a little pain.
I mean, is beer considered sauce? Is a Pacifico considered sauce? Mm.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I know we're not at final questions, but I'm going to go ahead and say no. Also, I know we're not at final questions, but doesn't Peter O'Toole strike you as a guy who never went by Pete?
Yes.
He's not Pete yeah. O'Toole. You weren't yeah. like, hey, yeah. no. Pete, welcome to the set. Like, he's Peter O'Toole. Mm-hmm.
Peter.
And nobody was like, Pete!
But anyway, this also stars Charlotte Rampling, the star of Night Porter, who had just been in 1974's Zardoz with Sean Connery and 1975's Farewell, My Lovely with Robert Mitchum, and would go on after this to shoot the NBC TV movie Sherlock Holmes in New York with Roger Moore. Why was Charlotte Rampling cast? I love this. Producer.
Is this final question? Is that a final question?
No, are we supposed to answer that one? It is. We can count it. But, producer Gerald Green, he said in October 1975 that Rampling was bankable. And he continued. He said, I had a mental picture of how the girl should look, and this was it. I knew our cameraman would freak out. She plays a former cabaret singer. By the way, news to me until I read that quote. A tough lady in a quiet way. When things get tough, her husband wilts. Rampling has all the qualities to make the part work. End quote. Then the article continues, but Green had also approached Jacqueline Bisset, who turned it down. So his mental picture of how the girl should look started at Jacqueline Bisset and then ended when Charlotte Rampling said yes.
But also Charlotte Rampling, easy on the eyes.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes, very
gorgeous.
Much so.
No, absolutely.
Very lovely and absolutely a lady that is your second wife. You know, she's an absolute hottie rebound second wife. When that first, okay, I'm jumping ahead, spoiler alert, but when that first old hag shows up to the island, you're like, you are a beautiful lady, but you're not Julia slash Charlotte beautiful, so
right,
sorry.
Right. Yeah. Younger, prettier, definitely gonna, should hopefully set the table for eventual wife number three, where you really lock down the person you want to be with.
Yeah.
This also stars Max von Sydow, who was quite busy during this time in the 1970s. He'd appeared in several movies a year, including 1973's The Exorcist, and then 1975's 3 Days of the Condor, and after this, he would get back to playing Father Marin in Exorcist 2.
Great movie. And highly underrated.
Highly underrated.
When the demon that is trying to take control of your daughter is named Pazuzu, you know that you're in for some real terror.
Absolutely. That's when it gets...
Pazuzu?
That's when it gets serious.
Pazuzu.
Pazuzu was the name of the demon. Pazuzu.
Wow.
Pazuzu is pretty, I'm pretty convinced, could be the name of a dog and no one would ever go, Exorcist 2?
Yeah. Now that you mention that, 100% the next name of whatever, the next dog we get. We're naming that dog Pazuzu. That is 100%. By the way, Exorcist 2, also directed by John Borman, who also directed Zardoz. Anyway, for everybody who's, why I was...
For those who are keeping score.
The Borman heads. You know who you are. But just for a second, let's just think about the fact that we have a movie with Peter O'Toole, Charlotte Rampling, and Max von Sydow in the cast. Let's just take a second before we talk about the actual movie and revel in the fact that we have those three in this movie. In a New World movie.
It's amazing.
It's
the acting in this movie is top notch.
yes. Great
that's
acting.
That's undeniable.
Great acting.
And we'll get into the rest. But the acting is top notch.
Do we need to, though? Could we just leave it at that? Be like, the acting, top notch. And that's it. So if you want more information, visit our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. We are part of the Everybody's Favorite Productions podcast.
Not it.
We are part of the...
Someone's.
We are part of the Someone's Production... We're part of the Somebody's Favorite Productions podcast network.
It's not so easy, the job I do, is it? It's not so easy.
It's not. You would have been an amazing Esuebo. Esuebo? Estebo?
Yeah, how do we pronounce his name?
Esuebo.
Can we get that out of the way?
Eusebio?
Is it Eusebio?
Eusebio?
Eusebio.
Like C-3PO.
Eusebio.
Right? Eusebio.
Sus-a-studio. Sus-a-studio.
Call him Sus-a-studio or C-3PO and just be done?
Yes.
Okay. But anyway, it's got a great cast. It's got great acting. And also the rest. Here's where you can watch it. If you want to catch up with Foxtrot, you can find it on Tubi.
Tubi.
It is also on YouTube.
YouTube! I don't know, I'm workshopping different.
Not as successful as your Tubi, yeah. but close.
Yeah. We'll get there. YouTube!
But now it's time to talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is Foxtrot about?
This one's a simple one. Four people with zero survival skills decide to move to a desert island and become trapped in the red room from Twin Peaks.
Totally. Yep. Yep. That is it. Yep. Erica, what is this movie about?
This movie shows what happens when rich people have an idea. Things can go wrong when, hey, let's build an island. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything,
especially when
wrong.
You have zero survival skills to live on a remote island.
It's what happens when you're so rich and you say, like, What if we just went to this remote island and people were like, yeah, you should. And you're like, all right, well, get on the boat because we're heading there now. Oh, but do you have supplies? Nah, dog. Supplies, they'll come on the second boat. You sure about that? There's a war going on. Yeah, no, it'll be fine. Let's go.
What could go wrong? I mean, here's the thing. By the time we get there, there will be a luxurious tent waiting for us. And we'll just live in the tent for a while. It has stained glass windows, even though it's a tent. And artwork, yes. And a beautiful headboard with two diagonally facing beds. This is a lovely tent, and we'll be just fine for a while. And then that second boat will come with all of our furniture and your harp and my and my hunting dogs and
right.
And horses and a croquet set, and we'll have a lovely time.
Oh, man. To add to it, what this movie's about for me was really choose the three people you're going to live a deserted island with wisely. And I think it would really help if you liked any of them. Right. Like, that would be important. I think that's key. You know, like,
but in theory, LeVue thought he was bringing, he thought he was bringing the most important people. He already had his heavy there. Larson was already on the island. He brought his butler and he brought his hot wife. Throw in some of that marmalade, you're good to go.
But Ryan, to your point, it's like when people ask you, you know, if you were trapped on a desert island and you had to, and you could bring five albums that you would have to listen to for the rest of your life.
Right.
Like, what were the best five albums that you would bring with me? These people heard that question totally wrong and brought the worst albums from their collection with them. And they're like, no. I thought we were going to bring our worst albums.
Yeah.
The things we hate.
To your point, it would take me forever to pick five records that I was going to listen to for the rest of my life. It would be very difficult. And it was not something that they thought long or hard about at all.
No.
Before they left the dock.
They went, what have we never listened to?
Yeah.
Or we listened to once and went, put that in the back of the collection. Let's bring that. And that's what they brought with them.
Yeah.
So it's four people who are the four worst albums of their collection.
They all legit living together. Really do bring like records and movies. They really brought their desert island.
They bring
with them
little oopsie movies too. Like they didn't think maybe we should leave this one reel.
Back home movies. They were like, oops.
I know we're not at favorite scenes, but in my mind when I was watching this, I was like, I bet Ryan's favorite scene is when on this island they watch movies that they brought. He's like, oh, look, they brought movies. They brought a projector. They brought a screen. They brought a film strip. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So studio handled it with white gloves so that he didn't mess up any of the film strip as he was feeding it into the projector.
That poor guy. He's like, I have so much to do. I did, you know, movie projectionist was not one of the qualifications, but here I am. Here's the Letterboxd synopsis for Foxtrot. It's very short, and it's informative. A Romanian aristocrat didn't know he's from Romania. News to me.
Yeah. Yeah, they breeze over that part.
I almost would say, Letterbox, he's not Romanian, but be honest, how would I know? I barely know anything about these people, and I spent a lot of time with them.
That's also what IMDb says.
Okay, well, maybe just the formal synopsis, but they retreats to a desert isle with his wife and servants on the eve of World War II. That's all true. They head there on a yacht. And here's the thing. This year, we've learned a lot about yachts and the movies that we've explored, in fact, just recently. And was it shellacked enough for you guys, this yacht? Because we know a yacht needs good shellacking.
I felt because there was a lot of wood in the interior and it was well shellacked. It was well taken care of. A couple rat traps would have been advisable.
Could have helped.
Your care and maintenance of your yacht goes beyond shellacking. Some of that is you need to make it rodent proof.
You have to have a dedicated shellackist. but also... Yeah.
I call him the shellacker, but either way, you know.
Sure, whatever you want
to
say.
You need to, you also need a good Orkin guy, just to kind of make sure everything's... Mm-hmm.
Whatever 1930s Orkin guy was.
Yeah. Right, I mean, they're not too far removed from the Spanish plague, so rats are a real issue at this stage in our history.
And the Spanish plague, it sounds kind of spicy. Sounds like you might get a nap in the middle. But at the same time, dangerous. You know what I mean? Don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. It will be beautiful to look at, but don't be fooled. It can be dangerous. We also, they are dancing on the yacht and they're listening to Foxtrot, the song, which felt like a little on the nose, but okay. I mean, it's even in the opening credits. Here's the Foxtrot. We're leaning in hard. And this initial dancing, I just wondered, to me, I was like, is this supposed to show our two leads, Livio and Julia, Peter O'Toole and Charlotte Rampling, is this supposed to show them at their happiest?
I think it's meant to show that they can fake liking each other for a few minutes.
Right, right. Because it felt like we caught them just after they had argued and they were like, well, let's dance and get over it and put on a record. But, and that seems to, that's the general tenor for this movie between in their relationship. Like they have the, they got the vibes of a couple that were just yelling at each other until before you showed up. That's basically their vibe.
Sure. And had to have that conversation of, hey, listen, we're going to be on this boat for a little while. We're going to live on this island. We need to figure out some common ground here. So let's let bygones be bygones. I'm going to put on the same song again. Right. And we're going to dance to it a second time just to cement we're in this for the long.
Also, we've got five records. So deal with this one. This is one of five.
I could pick the other four, but I'm just going to play this one again.
Let's not burn what those are. Let's just try to enjoy them a bit at a time so we don't get burned out quick. Once they get on the island, they find Larson. He's already there. He's played by Max von Sydow, as we mentioned earlier. He's already waiting for them, and he's got a bunch of staff there. We're sort of like, what's going on here? What's happening? Because we've been on the boat. They're dancing. We don't really know who these people are, what's happening. So we get a bit of a sense of what's happening once von Sydow talks to Pete O'Toole in this clip.
And how have you been feeling?
Oh, I'm always ill, but I'm used to it.
You were lucky to get away in time.
This island is my only hope. If I stay there, I'd die. They'll be killing each other soon enough.
You're not the military type. In any case, your health would exempt you.
My wound would reopen. Or a rat would infect me. Ah, I'm tired.
You mustn't try to do too much.
They do too much, and look at them. They're as healthy as beer.
That's not an expression I was familiar with. As healthy as beer.
Yes. Back to being off the sauce. Yeah. Beer is still an option, right?
Yeah, I mean, in the 30s, they did say they thought a little beer would be good for you, you know?
Sometimes and that they still works in 2025.
Sometimes they had it right back then, all right? You know, sometimes they had it right. Yeah, also this clip. You guys pumped? You guys pumped for this movie? You guys pumped up? You meet your hero here?
I'd like to say that scene punctuates the a quiet conversation in what is a rambunctious action-filled movie. But in reality, that is the movie.
For the whole movie. For a significant chunk. Yeah, it's a lot of, like, and mystery to it that if there's anything noirish, there's a little bit of, like, what happened? But, like, once you kind of find out, you don't get a lot of details, and when you find out, you're like, oh, I mean, all right. You know, it's not like he's always kind of sick. He's kind of sickly. There's actually a part of like Peter O'Toole's performance that I feel like his energy, which is he's a little bit more, you know, kind of quiet and a little bit less energetic. And I feel like the rest of the cast picks up on that and they just like also do it. It's like,
right.
They're like, oh, okay, I'll match your energy. It's like, no, you guys should be at a different energy, but everybody's at his energy, which is a little slow. But so he's bought this island. And what's the plan for living here? Just to have ships constantly show up with gasoline and marmalade?
Like, yeah, that's throw up a tent, grow some roses, and bada boom, bada bing. Right. Everybody's doing great. Everybody's here on just rich man's island, rich guy's island.
I love that the first, I guess it's not maybe not the first thing to try to grow, but the first successful thing is roses, an aggressively difficult plant to grow. So it made me think, did they not try with, let's say, I don't know, vegetables, fruit, things you could eat?
They didn't.
They were like, no, pretty flowers is what we need. Yeah,
my grandma would have said the same thing, you know?
Yeah, very British. It's a very British thing to do. But yeah, what if he gets sick, which he already is? What if he needs medical attention from living that on an
fresh,
island?
Clean island air.
That's right.
Heal anything that ails him.
Oh my God. Yeah, they have no plan. So mm-hmm. You are watching a movie for a long time, kind of going like, how's this going to work?
Mm-hmm.
Also, did no one think to bring the building materials with you? Ahead
of
you?
Ship. On the
ahead
next ship.
Ahead of you, maybe.
Yeah,
I realize
the tent,
war is mounting. I get it. But.
The stained glass came on the first ship.
The
next ship will bring the building materials.
Besides Larson, along for the ride is Susudio, who's played by Mexican actor Jorge Luque, who had been in a few American Westerns at that point, often playing a Native American. So, well done, everybody.
Good on him.
Yeah, what's that?
Never mind. Go on.
It's not his fault. 1972's Ozana's Raid with Burt Lancaster was one a pretty big. It's a good movie. If anyone hasn't seen it. Susudio is very much there for the money. He tells Larson at one point that he plans to take all the money he's saved and he's going to leave the couple and head out on his own, which to me was like the equivalent of a cop saying, I'm retiring in 2 weeks. Like, you know, nothing good's going to happen. Like, bad shit's going to go down. Like, you're like, I'm almost there. You know, this is my last job, guys. Then I'm going to retire. Like,
yeah. That was absolutely the vibe. I think what's so interesting about it is you have that sense from the moment they land on the island. You're like, oh, this is not going to play out well in their favor. And you feel immediately bad for Eusebio Susudio because you know he's never getting off that island. Larson's never getting off that island. Like, everyone's doomed from the start. But there, I think for me, the one thing this movie was lacking was just sort of like was mystery or suspense.
Yeah.
Around how long it would take. Because the setup with LeVue is you don't really know his background. You don't know why he's rich. You don't know how he came upon his fortune. But he makes terrible decisions on the island, to your points. He only brought flooring and, like, headboards and art and, you know, stained glass. Like, and he's bringing marmalade instead of, like, powdered milk and things that would be that would make a difference when you're going to a remote island. So it's like, did he know that he wasn't coming back from this, and it was just his final, like, I want to be on this island with all my creature comforts. I know I'm not getting out. That was the piece for me that either I missed it. I'm curious if you guys have felt this or picked up on it. There isn't mystery. There isn't suspense. You have a sense from the jump that they're doomed on this island. But for me, the missing piece is like, why? Did he know that? And he knows that he's dying, and he was just like, whatever, I want to be comfy. I don't know. That didn't get answered for me. I couldn't figure that out.
There seems to be a sense of like, we're building tension by just taking our time. And it's like, that's not how you build tension. But like from the get-go, even on the first ship over, Susudio is told by some of the other like yacht workers, they're like, you know what happens on an island? You know, they go crazy, basically. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, you know, like they set the table really early, like bad shit might happen, but it's like, but like settle in, sit down, get ready for some domestic drama, because we're not going to get to the shit going down for quite some time.
Right, but at the very beginning, they start setting the foundation of this movie in that Susudio and Larson are quickly talking shit about their boss, Livio? Is that his name? Livio?
Livio.
So they're talking shit about their boss, and then we get to a scene where they're all on the beach and supposed to be enjoying each other's company and hanging out, and Livio dares Larson that he can outswim him or he can hold his breath underwater for longer or something like that. And though we never see it because they're off camera, when they come up, Livio has won the competition, and you can sense that Larson let him win because it's his boss. Mm-hmm. And that's what you do. Yeah. And then there's quickly sort of an argument because Livio imagines his mistress down on the beach, and then we become aware that Julia knew about the mistress and feels that she can never top the mistress. The mistress was his true love. But what, like, all the while all of this is happening in the scene that's sort of setting up where are these people in their relationship, the one thing that I took away is in the 1930s, men and women could wear the same swimsuit and be totally cool. That everyone wore a one piece back then.
That's right. You needed shoulder straps. They didn't have ties. They didn't have like elastic. There's nothing to keep that thing on your waist. You got to have the shoulder straps. Same like the ladies.
I mean, if you're girthy, you could keep it up, right?
Your donger keeps it in place.
Donger like the coat hanger that just kind of keeps that
just keeps it as a shelf. Keeps it from right. Dipping.
Creates a shelf that keeps it up, right?
It's cold right? Water, Mark. It's cold water. I don't know. It's not reliable. That's a good point though that you're bringing up about it's a good point about him seeing his ex or whatever, because as we mentioned, it comes up in a movie. Again, when they have movie night, they see a strange woman that appears at the end of a reel. And this is when we find this stuff out.
Told me you'd destroy that film.
I swear to you, Julia, I burnt that film.
You're a fool, Livio. See why I never believe him, Larson? Even now he throws his mistress in my face.
Brandy. Mariana. She was young. I burnt that film in a hotel grate in Budapest 2 years ago. We all saw it, Livio. It was there. Mariana de Guelfi of Liguria, deceased, has a way of wounding me at the most unexpected times. Whatever happened to her, Livio? You were not responsible.
I didn't kill my wife! I don't care!
Oh,
I didn't kill my mistress! I don't care!
Oh, man. Oh, my God.
There's so much going on in this movie, and it just doesn't go anywhere beyond that. Like, mm-hmm. How different might it have been to see him go insane thinking about this woman and what happened to her and keep seeing her, but he doesn't.
Or even just, it building to like a real serious, you know, moment where they have to have it out about this ex. They do bring it up a bit.
Yeah.
But they never really have it out, and they don't really have like a, it's a very British script. All the emotions are sort of, they're sort of padded down. Let's not let him rise up.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Aren't we led to believe that his inability to move on from his mistress or his ex-wife or whatever, because I got confused. I was like, which one are we talking about? Because he's imagining a woman on the beach and then she supposedly died that he didn't do something or did do something to kill her or not kill her.
She but stabbed then, him. She stabbed him. That's why he's always feeling ill. And then he covered it up and said that he was the one and it was his fault. And you know.
In all the verbal conversational detail, I missed that. But then, anyway, where I was going with this.
It's at the tail end of the movie. It doesn't come up till like way, way late. And it's like, at that point, you're like, oh, okay, I guess.
And not to fast forward to the end, and I won't give it away because we still need to talk about it, but aren't we led to believe that it is because of his inability to get over his mistress? That is kind of the leading thinking that draws or makes Julia make the decision that she makes towards the end of the movie.
I guess. I don't know why she does that. I don't know. I watched it going, why? I don't know.
Yeah.
Same.
I was thinking that was part of it, was the, I'll never get to that height. I'm never going to be respected and loved in the same way.
I don't know. I never got from her that she was yearning for him to love her. Most of the movie, I'm like, do they like each other? Do they enjoy each other's company? Because it does not seem so. This does not feel like two people that like each other all that much.
And sleeping in two separate beds doesn't help.
Well, but those...
I feel like that was the best decision they made. Because imagine, it's hot. You're on an island.
Right.
You know, the last thing you want is somebody just... ugh. Laying right next to you when you're just sweating it out in that tent. What was the airflow like in there? God, it had to be awful.
They got it set up right. They had initially, the plans were wrong. That's what Larson says in the beginning. They didn't have the right airflow and he set it up better, which is great considering they didn't have building materials, but also maybe just go check it out, take a little look-see and then come on back once they have all the stuff built. I don't know. Anyway, that's just like an idea and a plan and that's not what this movie's about. So let's move on. As they slowly begin to adapt to island life, they get involved in some crab races and they play card games and then friends arrive. But were they even invited? I don't know.
I think that reeked of Larson. That was right. All
that
Larson.
That felt like Larson, yeah.
That, there's no way Julia would have invited Levine's ex and
she
other.
Didn't. Oh yeah, his another ex. Like,
it's
his, what?
It's another ex of his who's still real into him. And
yeah,
there's no way that was Larson stirring some shit for sure. He was stirring some shit. He wanted some strange. that was Larson. That had Larson all over it.
So. Okay, I just want to take a beat and talk about this for a minute. Regardless of who invited them, who are these friends? Let's say for a moment, you live in Santa Monica, and a good friend of yours calls you and says, hey, we're going to throw you a party because you got a promotion at work or some shit like that, right? And so come on over. We're throwing you a big party. All the friends, all your friends are going to be here. But your friend is in Eagle Rock. Now, that's like roughly 20 miles away. You're going to be like, ooh, I got to take the 10. That's going to be backed up. I got to do that 10-110 interchange. I got to then navigate over the 5. I know they're throwing me a party. These people fucking navigated the fucking ocean.
They did. Okay. They came now, a distance. They went a distance.
Back in the day before Waze, we had MapQuest. And if I didn't know where I was going to go, I would look it up on MapQuest. I'd print out the directions. And at least 50% of the time, I got completely lost.
And prior to that, you had a Thomas guide in your car, which you had to look up the street name and then keep going to different pages and to see where the hell you were, like you were Magellan.
And hope it was, yes. And
the Magellan of the highways.
Yeah, right. And hope it was updated because new roads would come in. And somehow, magically, these people, like, this is like Swingers at the beginning when they take the drive to Vegas and they're like, Vegas. And then they're kind of midway through the drive and they're like, Vegas. Yeah, yeah. These people were on a boat for days navigating the ocean for a weekend party. What? I really want to know their motivation because I need to have that kind of get up and go in my life. I don't have that in me. And again, I don't know anyone who does.
They also, again, don't feel like people that like each other very much. So I
But what brought her there was LeVue. That's what brought her. So what is it about this dude that the ladies can't get enough?
He got knifed by a girl and he just kept on going. And then he didn't even blame her. And they were like, this guy is the best.
Yeah, there is something about that dude that has the ladies literally setting sail and hitting the waves and hiring a crew and packing a bunch of gowns and cigarettes and booze and sailing to him.
Exactly. And like, how many times during that week-long trip or whatever it was to get out to the island, did people go, wait, so who's gonna be at the party? Well, right. Larson's gonna be there. Oh, awesome. Who else? Well, LeVue is gonna be. Fuck LeVue, we don't like him. I know, but Larson said it's gonna be a fucking rager, so it's gonna be totally cool. You're already halfway across the Atlantic or Pacific or whatever that, where I guess it's Mexico. So you're in the Pacific Ocean and you're going, well, we're already 3 days from port. So we've committed to this. So then these friends arrive and decide to not only party, but completely fuck shit up while they're on the island. But it does give Larson the opportunity to, in the most unsensual romantic way, touch boobs on as many women as he can.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
Like, he is a boob man, is what we establish in this.
Oh, yeah.
In this scene.
Yeah. Our Larson really lets out his inner creep, for sure, in this party.
And I'm imagining Max von Sydow coming back from shooting this and his friends being like, oh, how was that shoot in Mexico? Oh, it was fine. I got to hold some boobs. Wait, what? Like, with Peter O'Toole? Like, you were holding boobs? Yeah. I mean, I don't know how they worked it into the script, but I got some boob time, so,
yeah,
you know.
Wild.
Yeah. I mean, all those Swedes are like, well, they're used to holding meatballs. You know what I mean? Like, that's like their... So, what they definitely did come out there for was a giant sex party, because that is what happens at this party. Also, they're also there to kill everything that's living on the island and isn't a human. And that's for sport. And I guess they kill even some of the seals there. And it gets Julia upset.
They're killing the seals.
There's nothing I can do about it. It's too late. It's done.
Those birds, those seals, they'd never heard a shot before. Killing them was easy.
Hunting is our only way to be intimate with nature.
You know yourself so well.
Just a quick point of clarity. Hunting is when you shoot an animal to consume it. Sport shooting is when you just go shoot shit for shits and giggles.
Yeah.
They were not hunting. They were just shooting shit to see what happens.
And at that time, it was like, why not grab some of them seals then and get some food going? I mean, like, you're on an island. You know, that marmalade isn't going to last forever, dude. Like,
right. But hold on. Shortly thereafter, they talk about, so all the friends leave. Like, now Julia and LeVue? Is that how we say it? I cannot remember his name. Like, I've got something blocking that in my head. So now LeVue and Julia are stuck with the last five albums in your collection equivalent of Genesis Calling All Stations and Guns N' Roses Chinese Democracy, and they have to live with them for the rest of time. And they start talking about rationing food because all the animals on the island have been killed, right? You're on an island, surrounded by water, which last time I checked is full of animals. Go fishing!
Mark, they didn't even pour their own lemonade. That was the studio's job. They're not going to get out there and hunt for fish. They don't even know how to pour lemonade.
Yeah. Studio was like digging for crabs and stuff in the sand, and they just stood there and watched him with their underneath their like parasols and were like, look at him dig.
And they used the crabs to play a game. Do you know how delicious those crabs would have been fresh from the sand? God, with lemonade, with fresh lemonade? That would have been a delicious lunch, but they used the crabs to play a fucking game.
This only reinforces my point that these people have zero survival skills.
Yeah.
They shoot the seals and the birds and they go, well, we're fucked. We don't have any food. Even though you're surrounded by water, they're like, well, it's over.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to have to eat the roses now because we're totally screwed.
They also have to ration food because the ship that's bringing all the building materials doesn't show up until it kind of does. And the yacht shows up. And that's when Larson and Susudio investigate it and find a bunch of rats. What happened exactly?
For sure. But also things are happening that are unexplainable. For example, who's pressing all their clothes? All of their clothes. These people are not in rags. They have finely ironed and pressed clothes through the entire film. Where's the iron? Who's doing that? It can't be Susudio for everything. Everyone is clean shaven. No one has scruff at any point. In fact, Susudio has scruff once in the beginning, and they make fun of him for having scruff and that he must shave that off. And they don't even get into the most important part, the real challenging part of living on a desert island. Where are you going, poop?
What's the toilet situation?
What's the toilet situation?
Yeah.
I'd be 5 days on that island, zero poops, and be in absolute pain. Just struggling.
When are you guys building a toilet structure? Because I need something.
Also, with LeVue's diet of brandy, cigars, and marmalade, his poops are pure diarrhea. Like,
pure, yeah.
He hasn't had a solid poop in months, if not years. So what?
And you know when his poop smells. You're like, oh, yeah. That's a
Yeah. Real bad.
That's real bad.
Yeah, it's like an old wooden box in the attic. You're like, that doesn't have a good smell in it.
Mm-hmm. Is that what brings the ladies? Is that what brings them?
Yeah.
Just that smell? He smells like an old attic, like a lemony old attic.
An old attic with a little touch of citrus.
Now, to be fair to things we loved and things we've hated, we've mentioned a lot of things we loved and hated. Is there anything else we've loved and hated? Do you guys want to sit around and talk about things we loved and things we hated?
Yes, let's talk about the things we loved and the things we hated about Foxtrot. Mark, what did you love?
I mean, I loved their bedroom. They had fantastic furniture. They had stained glass. I have to assume that all the water was Voss. They had chocolates on their pillows when they laid down to go to sleep. Maybe there was a spritz of Gucci perfume on their pillow that was put down. They had turndown service for sure.
Did Eusebio do like a little towel animal, do you think, before they went to bed?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that their room felt like a little bit of England, some English style and proper decoration on a desert island. And I appreciated the attention to detail.
Yeah. It was cool looking. Yeah. Erica, what did you love?
I don't know. I've been racking my brain. I don't know what I loved. There's a lot of weird unanswered things in this movie. I guess if pressed, I would say that I loved the costumes. I thought they were great. I loved what they brought, the mix of gowns and dress clothes and things that make absolutely no sense on an island, especially an island where you're going to live for an indefinite amount of time. I really liked that a lot. But what did I love about this movie? I don't know. I'm left with so many questions that there's nothing that I can say without a doubt. Like, I loved that. So, there you go.
I love Cabo. It looked beautiful.
You know there's a resort built right where they shot this.
Right where they shot it. 100%. There, I guarantee it, because I think last time we were there, there was a resort right there in that spot. But it's a beautiful place, and it looked great. I know it's not supposed to be Cabo or Mexico, but it looked awesome. And I was like, yay, Cabo. I knew it right away. I was like, that's Cabo San Lucas, and it looked beautiful. Good job, Cabo. Let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
The friends just wasting ammunition. It was just the fact that they killed the animals, fine. But like, why waste it? For what purpose?
Yeah.
There was no purpose. And it just felt like, I guess, the pent up angst and energy from being on a week's long boat ride to your friend's island for a weekend getaway will make anyone make some bad decisions, but it's just a horrible waste of ammunition.
Big waste.
Save that for something more important. Fucking World War II is right around the corner. Hold on to some of that ammunition.
Yeah. Yeah. The friends in this definitely felt like the friends of Dan Aykroyd's from Trading Places. It felt like those kinds of friends were like his friends at the club that were like very fake friends, surface friends. I mean, even though they took a long distance, but that was probably just for bragging rights when they go back home. They're like, I spent a weekend at a deserted island, you know, with a boat because I could.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, they felt very much like those kinds of people. We'll do whatever we want and we're going to be your friends unless we don't feel like being your friends anymore. And then we won't be, because that's it. Those kinds of friends. Not great. Erica, what'd you hate?
I kind of touched on it already. Just a lot of the unanswered questions and the setup of things without any further kind of dive into it, and touching on his different lovers and his past and how did he get hurt, but you don't really ever find out the full story of anything. You know, mm-hmm. How did rats get on that boat that infected it initially? So there's just so many things left unanswered that I couldn't take it anymore and ran into the sea. All right. I'm just minutes from running into the sea.
There's nothing wrong with a movie that has like some threads that kind of don't go anywhere at certain times, depending on the movie. But when you have a movie of nothing but threads, it's like, wait, well, something has to give me something.
Right.
You know, I don't have anything. I don't even know what anybody really wants to do other than not be near World War II. And then Eusebio wants to take his money and eventually depart and leave them all. And that's all I know about anybody. I don't even know what Larson wants. Who is he? What? I don't know anything. So like, there's nothing but loose threads in this movie. So it's very like, but the thing I hated was so many pauses.
Yeah.
And I really noticed that putting the clips together for this, which I will have you note, I edited down.
Yeah. Oh, I believe it.
And you won't.
I can't believe I watched this in one sitting.
It's
I'm proud crazy. Of myself. I don't know if this is worldly worthy, but I watched this in one sitting.
I feel like an award needs to be issued.
I made it through this. Yeah,
in a one Foxtrot sitting.
Award for sitting through an entire movie in one sitting.
With and this many pauses.
Purely on the strength of the performances, but they give so many pauses. It's like, get to your point. You don't have a point, but just get to the end of your sentence, please. It takes so long. It's just so many pauses in general. Everything takes so long. And he shoots a lot of things in like a single take. So there's like nowhere to go. There's nothing that doesn't. And this isn't even like a pacing thing. I love still solid shots without cutting. I can handle that. But there's just nothing happening. There's no reason for it. You have to have a purpose. Let's switch to favorite scene. What's our favorite scenes, Mark?
I guess I would say every scene with Charlotte Rampling, because she's just smoking hot in this movie. And she, I mean, she does a great job, but she is really strikingly beautiful.
Sure.
And, you know,
she's plays no Jack off the set, but she's pretty great.
She's pretty amazing. And she plays the Reverend Mother in the new Dune movies. And I thought,
oh, yeah. Yes,
would I have sex with the Reverend Mother? I guess I would.
So you didn't see that revelation coming to you after watching this movie.
I guess the favorite scene is yet to be filmed.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
He went full Larson.
Oh, yeah. You went Larson. You went Larson.
Full Larson for his favorite scene.
To touch those meatballs. Erica, what was your favorite scene?
I actually do have a favorite scene. And okay. my favorite scene was when they all sit down for a meal. LeVue, Julia, Larson, and Sussudio. And they're like, Sussudio, join us. Like, they want him to join them for a meal at the table. Up to this point, he's just been serving them the entire time. They invite him to join them for a meal. And they're all pouring themselves wine. And they give him wine. And he spills it. And I just thought that was really great. That, like, his whole job is to, like, keep everything perfect and get them everything they need. And then when he's, like, taking care of himself, he's, like, a goof and, like, spills it and tips it over on the table and cleans it up. And he's like, oh, sorry. And he's super awkward at the table. So I did think that scene was kind of cool, just to see that when he is treated like one, like an equal, he, like, can't handle it. And he becomes this very, like, awkward guy. But when he's working for them, he's super confident and calm. He's got everything on lockdown. He's, like, hitting on one of the ladies and scores with one of the ladies when the friends come to visit the island. Like, when he is working, his work personality is so different than when they treat him like an equal. So I thought that seemed very
That's
cool.
Great. Yeah. It's actually really good. I don't really have a favorite.
Thanks, Ryan. Hey,
no, I mean,
finally, like, I did it.
That's a really, no,
finally
that's a,
impressed Ryan. I did
I meant that. I just meant that was a really great scene. I couldn't think of a particular moment. So for me, I just picked out the, like, final half hour, which I was like, well, at least things kind of picked up, because then they start fighting with each other and they start taking different parts of the island, and they're like, he's trying to protect his wife and he grabs the gun. And I'm like, well, all right. I mean, I don't care much about these people, but, like, at least something's happening. And it was like a long period of time where they're stranded and they're just trying to get along, and then they fight and they then end up fighting each other. And I was like, did George Romero see this? Anyway.
Well, it also gets a little touch of the Thing in, like, who's trying to score, who's the bad person in this group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're like, you know, I don't have a particular moment. But he's like, shoot, you know, they try to take out what's giving them power. Why is the word escaping?
Generator?
The generator.
Brandy? So
the brandy is giving him power. The brandy is definitely giving him power.
Good brandy can dispel anything.
Except for, like, diarrhea. That it cannot dispel. Like, you're just stuck with it.
Dispel or expel?
But, like, anyway, any of those moments, I think that it was at least, like, exciting. It was somewhat exciting and interesting. Let's do some quick research. We've already had enough final questions. Let's do some quick research. This was an American-Mexico production that started shooting June 1976 in Cabo San Lucas. They actually went for a long time. And if you look at IMDb, and I'm not sure if this is true because IMDb is not good at trivia, but it says June to September, which I was like, that's weird. So then I was looking into, why is this such a long shoot? Well, the reason is because they had to take a break because Charlotte Rampling had tonsillectomy. And it was actually supposed to last only a 2-week break, and it ends up being a 4-week break. And then they finally come back around August. I think they leave in July, come back around August. So they take, like, a whole month off in the break so she can get a tonsillectomy. The budget of this is $3.5 million. It was quite an expensive production. And there was a lot of these sort of international, you know, two different countries coming together, making some movie with a bunch of stars, thinking that they were going to make a ton of money off of it. But this is a lot of money to put into it. And even Gerald Green, said that he said, quote, they've never put this sort of money in an international movie before. So this was a lot of money even for that. And I have to think a lot of that goes to the cast. I'm not sure exactly what they got paid, but I did see an article that said that Charlotte Rampling was paid at least, she was paid more than what she made in her last movie. And the last movie, she made $250,000. You got to think that's probably maybe doubled. You got to think, you know, Pete O'Toole got probably a cool mil or under. I mean, Max von Sydow maybe comes a little cheaper, but I don't know. He also was in The Exorcist. That was a big movie. So, you know, he's been around for a long time and he's international. So I don't know. Everybody got, I think it all went to the cast. We talked about those seals. There's a trouble with, they had trouble with those seals, as Marilyn Beck reported in June 1975. They have that storyline where they shoot all the seals. And they said in the article, when it became evident that there aren't many seals that can be trained to play dead, producer Gerald Green started a search within Mexican animal retreats for carcasses of seals that had died of natural deaths, which could be hauled back to the shooting site and used as bodies.
I don't remember them actually showing any dead seals.
Me either.
I saw them shooting.
Me
either. The seals were there, and then they do a cutaway to the people, like a close-up of them shooting.
Yep. And then you just hear sounds. So I don't remember that either, but... this thing gets picked up by New World, and it's also that Corman can release this as his big foreign acquisition of early 1976. He had obviously put out Whispers and Cries, Cries and Whispers, and Armored, and other, you know, art house movies. So this was going to be his selection. He releases it in March 1976, and it's quickly pulled. It doesn't seem to do very well. I couldn't find a review about it. There's not a whole lot. I think they pulled it fast. He then sits on it for like a year and a half, and he retitles it and releases it as The Other Side of Paradise in late 1977. It gets released as The Far Side of Paradise in the UK and some other foreign territories. And in late 1977, November 1977, they release it and they add a bunch of nudity. So they extend out that scene where all the friends come and make it more of like an orgy. I also think that I read a couple reviews, and I think there's also, they use some body doubles for Pete O'Toole and Charlotte Rampling to kind of make them have a little bit more in the sex scene. So trying to give it a little something else.
Peter O'Toole didn't want to show off his O'Toole.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, they didn't shoot that. They're just trying to spice it up for the re-release. In fact, Corman then re-releases it as The Other Side of Paradise. And in the campaign, it says, "In search of pleasure, they went too far. A garden of sin and seduction." So, you know, he gives it the old exploitation treatment and tries to see if he can milk a little money out of it.
Listeners, that is not what this movie is at all.
No.
Please don't be fooled.
And it's not the first time that Corman would try to dress something up like it's a big sexy movie you got to go see, and it's not. But he had released so many of them that, you know, he probably got some people that were fooled. As I mentioned, Arturo Ripstein never makes another English language film. He was pretty disappointed with the production, disappointed with how it got released. How could he not, at least in the U.S.? But here's a fun thing to end on. I just found this in the San Antonio Star in June 1975. There's some star gossip as they're talking about the production of this movie. And it says, Charlotte Rampling and Peter O'Toole will co-star in Foxtrot. It'll be Charlotte's first musical role.
What?
It's not a musical. It's not a musical.
Unless that's amazing.
Playing records is a musical.
Yeah, somebody in this. Well, I think maybe they confused it because they were like, she plays a singer, which again barely comes up. It does come up in a monologue she mentions to him, but very obliquely. And there are so many pauses in that scene. I tried to clip that scene, and it is so long and has so many pauses. I was like, forget it. It's not worth it. It's rough.
Singer.
It was not unlike The Oldest Profession in the future. All those pauses. Oh my gosh. But that is it. As we've already gone over, that's the end.
Good brandy can dispel anything.
That is it. That is Foxtrot. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to hear more of our episodes of Noir-vember from this month and from before and all our other episodes, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com, and then buy a t-shirt that helps support the show. We got a bunch of new t-shirts there, some cool designs. Check it out. We'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.